Let's see if you've gotten the message yet, shall we?
Said Umbridge's soft voice half an hour later. She moved toward him, stretching out her short, be-ringed fingers for his arm, and then, as she took hold of him to examine the words now cut into his skin, pain seared, not across the back of his hand, but across the scar on his forehead. At the same time, he had a most peculiar sensation somewhere around his midriff. He wrenched his arm out of her grip and leapt to his feet, staring at her. She looked back at him, a smile stretching her wide, slack mouth.
"Yes, it hurts, doesn't it?"
she said softly. He did not answer. His heart was thumping very hard and fast. Was she talking about his hand, or did she know what he had just felt in his forehead?
"Well, I think I've made my point, Mr. Potter. You may go."
He caught up his school bag and left the room as quickly as he could. "Stay calm," he told himself as he sprinted up the stairs. "Stay calm. It doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means." "Mimbulus Mimbletonia," he gasped at the fat lady, who swung forward once more. A roar of sound greeted him. Ron came running toward him, beaming all over his face and slopping butterbeer down his front from the goblet he was clutching.
"Harry, I did it! I'm in! I'm keeper!"
"What? Oh, brilliant," said Harry, trying to smile naturally, while his heart continued to race and his hand throbbed and bled.
"Have a butterbeer."
Ron pressed a bottle onto him.
"I can't believe it! Where's Hermione gone?"
"She's there,"
said Fred, who was also swigging butterbeer, and pointed to an armchair by the fire. Hermione was dozing in it, her drink tipping precariously in her hand.
"Well, she said she was pleased when I told her," said Ron, looking slightly put out.
"Let her sleep," said George hastily.
It was a few moments before Harry noticed that several of the first years gathered around them bore unmistakable signs of recent nosebleeds.
"Come here, Ron, and see if Oliver's old robes fit you,"
called Katie Bell.
"We can take off his name and put yours on instead."
As Ron moved away, Angelina came striding up to Harry.
"Sorry I was a bit short with you earlier, Potter," she said abruptly. "It's stressful, this managing Lark, you know. I'm starting to think I was a bit hard on Wood sometimes."
She was watching Ron over the rim of her goblet with a slight frown on her face.
"Look, I know he's your best mate, but he's not fabulous," she said bluntly. "I think with a bit of training he'll be all right, though. He comes from a family of good Quidditch players. I'm banking on him turning out to have a bit more talent than he showed today, to be honest. Vicky Frobisher and Jeffrey Hooper both flew better this evening, but Hooper's a real whiner. He's always moaning about something or other, and Vicky's involved in all sorts of societies. She admitted herself that if training clashed with her charm club, she put charms first. Anyway, we're having a practice session at 2 o'clock tomorrow, so just make sure you're there this time. And do me a favour and help Ron as much as you can. Okay?"
He nodded, and Angelina strolled back to Alicia Spinett. Harry moved over to sit next to Hermione, who awoke with a jerk as he put down his bag.
"Oh, Harry, it's you. Good about Ron, isn't it?"
she said blearily.
"I'm just so tired,"
she yawned.
"I was up until 1 o'clock making more hats. They're disappearing like mad."
And sure enough, now that he looked, Harry saw that there were woolly hats concealed all around the room where unwary elves might accidentally pick them up. "Great," said Harry distractedly. If he did not tell somebody soon, he would burst.
"Listen, Hermione, I was just up in Umbridge's office, and she touched my arm."